GSK, Novartis, and you said ESL Sciences? There was one I just missed on that.
I said Novartis CSL from Australia, yeah.
Yep. I'm Ross Felice. I'm a medical officer in the Office of the Chief Scientist. And And I'm involved in a number of regulatory science research activities and collaborations, one of which is the Georgetown Center for Excellence in Regulatory Science, on which I'm the project scientist, but I also have a little bit of interaction with the Maryland CIRCE as well. So I'm going to give a very brief introduction, just a little bit of background about the CIRCEs and why we initiated them, and then I'm going to give most of the time to the two principal investigators so they can talk a little bit more about the details of what they're working on. So you've heard today and yesterday from a number of speakers about how science is really the foundation of everything we do here at the FDA, and there's been a number of reports that have been issued over the last several years basically reiterating that fact and how important it is for us to keep up to date on emerging technologies and scientific developments. And that sort of culminated in a report last year, which is our strategic plan for regulatory science, which described how important science is, how we need to be keeping up in the field of regulatory science, and identified these eight priority areas, which we felt were really important for the FDA to be focusing their energies on and really keeping up to date, developing their capabilities. And these are the eight priority areas here, which I've sort of paraphrased. There's a little more details in the report itself. But one thing that we felt was really important is that it's important for us not just to try and develop our capabilities internally, but really to reach out to outside groups. So folks in academia, other government agencies, nonprofits, industry, patient groups, and other folks, to really try and harness all the important basic science and applied science research that's happening outside of the FDA, as well as educational opportunities to learn from all those folks doing those things, working with emerging technologies, developing medical products, et cetera. And so one of the ways we thought would really be beneficial, and one of the ways that we're really excited about and have really been excited with the progress so far, is by developing these Centers for Excellence in Regulatory Science and Innovation. Just about exactly 1 year ago, we issued awards to two institutions, which are obviously local, Georgetown and University of Maryland. And the goal of these collaborative centers is to address those eight priority areas in the strategic plan. And it really is by two main mechanisms. The two sort of pillars of these centers are, on the one hand, to do innovative, collaborative, regulatory research projects that address those eight priority areas, but also to establish collaborative educational training and scientific exchange opportunities so scientists here at the FDA and policymakers and researchers can go learn from the folks at these academic institutions, learn about what's happening in the medical product development arena, learn what's happening clinically, and learn just basic, scientific knowledge from them, but also vice versa, so those folks at the academic institutions understand the issues we're dealing with in regulatory review, important regulatory science issues, and et cetera. So the last thing I just wanted to mention is that we've obviously established these locally, and this was an important thing that we chose to do. Not only are Georgetown and Maryland obviously very strong academic institutions that are very well qualified to do this type of a thing, but we felt that establishing them close to the FDA's main campus here at White Oak was really important because it allowed us to have as much face-to-face and interaction as possible. So that's it for me. I'd just like to have Dr. Polly first from University of Maryland. We'll talk about their CIRCE, and then Dr. Schulzen after him about Georgetown. So, and we'll take any questions afterwards.
Thanks, Ross. My name is Jim Polly. I'm a faculty member at the University of Maryland. I'm a co-director of the Maryland CIRCE. Bill Bentley, a faculty member in the bioengineering department, is also my colleague in crime here. Let's see. I'm trying to forward the slides. Okay. But we started about a year ago, and there's three areas in which the Maryland CIRCE is working in. Okay. Okay. So in general, the general scope is exactly what Ross says. Regulatory science research, collaborative with the FDA. Fortunately, we're very logistically close to the FDA, so that really facilitates that. And then also another big part is training and exchange. Okay, So the FAA did issue a request for proposal a little over a year ago, and we replied. And in that proposal, they indicated at that time 6 priority areas. And in case you don't have a copy of these slides, I can make those available. But the 3 priority areas had to do with discovery, drug discovery, in particular looking at preclinical assessment of safety and efficacy, since I think everyone has an interest in being able to develop drugs and devices. Second one is really the technology area, ensuring readiness to evaluate innovative and emerging technologies. And folks in our device group at College Park are kind of leading that. And then additionally, third area is harnessing diverse data through information sciences. Okay, so I'll just take you briefly through the 3 project areas, and be glad to answer any questions during the time. So project 1 involving preclinical assessment of safety and efficacy. So we're really working mostly with the FDA Office of Clinical Pharmacology. They're interested in particular in the area of drug-drug interactions, in particular drug-drug interactions that are mediated by so-called transporters. So transporters exist throughout the body to allow nutrients to go between cells and tissues in the compartment. And as it turns out, they can also impact drugs and how drugs get around, which can impact safety and efficacy. Unfortunately, this can also be a basis for drug-drug interactions. So we're looking at various types of transporters, OCT2, MATES, BSEP, in terms of whether these, whether there are bases for drug-drug interactions. The FDA, as you know, has guidance out, and they even have guidance in this area of, you know, what transporters might be most important for drug development. And we're just kind of evaluating whether these, their potential importance. Okay. Project 2 involves technology. In particular, there's 2 types of technology that we're working with the FDA on in the laboratory, hypospectral imaging, as well as developing standards for tissue engineering scaffolds. So with regard to hyperspectral imaging, there's in both cases, really standards issues. How does one go about standardizing how these types products that would be in this area would actually perform? For example, take in the example tissue engineering, there needs to be standards in terms of measuring properties of these tissues, and that can actually be a function of just architecture. So that's what really the type of research that's been going on in this first year in that particular project area. And fortunately, the folks working in that area are only a few miles away from where we are today at White Oak, folks at College Park. Third area, harnessing data. There's the biggest project involves so-called patient-prescriber agreements. So as you know, patient-prescriber agreements are becoming more and more in practice, in medical practice. These agreements between patients and their prescribers or physicians, particularly in the area of pain medications. And so what we're doing is we're just sort of assessing the landscape at this point doing some focus groups to see really just how well they're doing and try to give some feedback to the FDA Safe Use Initiative Office. So that's an example of what's going on in Project 3. Of course, training is a big thing. We have monthly lectures here at White Oak. A group of us get together, both FDA staff and Maryland staff, to identify, you know, what are some of the training needs within the agency, and who can we bring in to be an outside speaker to speak at the agency. Just last week, we had our first annual CIRSE Day, and just to give you an idea, you can see on this slide here some of the speakers. And really the intent was, again, working with our group, which includes FDA representatives, identify industry speakers who can maybe come in, come to the University of Maryland, invite people from the public, obviously FDA, University of Maryland, et cetera, to talk about issues that are maybe need some addressing. For example, Dr. Connolly at Lilly spoke about devices and human factors. There's all sorts of devices out there, including relatively simple devices such as syringes. Well, there's different types of syringes, and there's certainly different types of patients. For example, those that have poor eyesight, or have poor dexterity, or have poor strength. And then these devices are used with drugs in a home setting. And you know, a question is whether we're really doing the best. We're really doing a good thing in the end for patients. Seems as if maybe there might be a little more need for coordination. Okay. We're really excited. We're starting two new programs at the University of Maryland. One, a master's in engineering and regulatory science, and that's being headed up by the College of Engineering at College Park. And another one, an online program, a master's of science in regulatory science. This is being headed up by the campus, by the Baltimore campus. And this is a little more drug-oriented. You can see the types of courses that are here, with a focus broadly on regulatory science, CMC, chemistry manufacturing control issues, clinical research, as well as post-marketing safety issues. For those of you who might be interested in the mechanics of how the Maryland CERCE operates, there's an executive committee composed of Maryland and FDA staff. There's projects that we've briefly discussed about, again, with Maryland and FDA staff. We also have an advisory committee. And here are the members on the advisory committee. And I hope I have not gone over my time. Thank you.
My name is Ira Schulson. I'm a physician. My professional background's in neurology and internal medicine, and I've spent most of my professional career involved in the formulation, design, and conduct of multi-center clinical trials, particularly related to Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, and other neurodegenerative disorders, and became involved in the emergence of this applied science, regulatory science, as part of an encore career, which I have found to be very interesting. I should also say to this group, thanks for inviting us to this writer's symposium. As a scientist who writes, I've long aspired to be a science writer. And I certainly appreciate the different audiences that somebody who writes a peer-reviewed scientific report and somebody who writes for the larger public, and I have great admiration for that. And I think there's always a lot to be learned when I have this interaction with professionals such as yourself. So I just want to emphasize a few things about regulatory science. It's I think, largely to the credit of the FDA, this whole term, this new applied science, has been rebranded about in 2010 because regulatory science applies to many other regulatory bodies other than the FDA. But it's an informed approach using evidence and facts to inform about decision making. And certainly there are important decision makers at White Oak and the various centers here and the review type of the processes. But I'd also point out that the decision makers who benefit from this knowledge and the dissemination of this information are manyfold besides regulators. There's obviously policy makers and policy implementers who could be well informed by evidence and facts. But even beyond that, we're very interested in other deciders, not the least of which are clinicians who have to prescribe medical products or the use of medical products, and most importantly, patients and families. So we see regulatory science, even in its broader scope, it's certainly not exclusive to the vision that the FDA has, but I just wanted to enlarge the scope. And I think something that Jim Pauley mentioned already, this whole area of health literacy, how people understand the ins and outs of medical products, medications, devices, biologics, and the like, it turns out to be very important. So it's a broad field, and it's waiting for education and research. So at Georgetown, we have two efforts underway. One, in the education area, we have engaged with the FDA to make available to them our continuing medical education, continuing nursing education, continuing law education to our colleagues here in White Oak, and we're hoping to continue to expand that. We too have developed a master's program in regulatory science that we're going to fully launch also in 2013. But in fact, we have already started debuting tomorrow is our course called Introduction to Regulatory Science and our first lecture on the fundamentals of regulatory science. It's a 13-week course that we're having that involves faculty both from Georgetown, other universities like University of Maryland, Howard University, and also co-taught by our colleagues at the FDA. So we see this not only as a great opportunity to convey new information, but to interact and learn how to teach this new field. And we're very excited about that. And we have a full group of students, and we're going to use this opportunity to, as I said, expand our program. So that's in the education and training area. We also have research projects, one of which is in the area of bioinformatics, headed up by Dr. Subha Madhavan, who's the director of our Center of Bioinformatics at Georgetown University. And the focus of these research projects is really on looking at large databases to predict outcomes that are relevant to the development of new medical products. Particular emphasis also on genomics. To what extent do genes predict and determine a variety of outcomes, not the least of which are adverse effects? There's a research project related to autoimmune diseases and vaccine development, and wouldn't it be nice to know what kind of autoimmune predispositions would lead to safe or perhaps adverse outcomes in relationship to the development of vaccine products. So those are two products. There's another one looking at a genomic database and trying to get at the best available data. So best available data, we pretty much can define what we mean by best. We know what data are, but available is another issue. To what extent are data available to the public, to all of us, to be able to carry out these analyses? And we became interested in this issue, not so much the wealth of data that the FDA receives, sifts through from a variety of sponsors, but the data that are out there that are generated particularly by innovators and developers of medical products, sponsors of developing medical products. And we're particularly interested in voluntary efforts that are undergoing either through consortia in the so-called pre-competitive space or other types of arrangements. So we have actually undertaken a two-pronged effort in this area. One is to actually go out and interview innovators, companies, the leadership of the companies and the executives to get an idea about data sharing, what would facilitate it, what gets in the way. We're particularly interested in the use of so-called negative data. And we're getting this information, and we're using qualitative analysis to, one, get some signals, and two, develop a questionnaire that we could take to a larger sample and get better data on that. At the same time, we're also developing a compendium that would help us understand what are the statutes, laws, policies, and guidances surrounding data sharing with respect to issues like intellectual property, antitrust, liability, privacy, and confidentiality. So those projects are underway, and I just close by encouraging you, if you haven't had the opportunity, to go to our website, regulatoryscience.georgetown.edu, which is overseen by Aaron Wilhelm, who's sitting right there, our project director, and hopefully you'll find some useful information. We'd be pleased to be contacted individually to answer questions that you might have. Thanks.
You mentioned briefly doing some focus groups, et cetera, on pain management. Could you elucidate on any information about that?
Sure. I may have misspoke. I don't think we've actually started that. So in the Project 3 area, this harnessing data, one of the bigger projects at this time is to look at patient-prescriber agreements, PPAs. And as you know, they've been actually probably around for 100 years in some form, but more recently, in a more formalized process, there's these agreements between patients and their physicians, most notably including in the pain area. So working with the Office of FDA Office of Safe Use Initiative, There's an interest in just characterizing what these agreements look like out there in practice, and how they're performing. Do they have any unintended consequences? I would just say that I think the FDA, probably here at Waco, if I would guess, is going to have an event on January 15th. I myself am not exactly an expert in this area. I can refer you to Eileen Zuckerman or Frank Palumbo, who are more experts. They're in the Department of Pharmaceutical Health Services Research at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy in Baltimore. I think the next stage in the research there, so they've collected a lot of data, a lot of characters, they've characterized a lot of PPAs out there, and it's available as an interim report to the agency. And the next step is really to do some focus groups. And I don't know that that's been finalized, exactly the scope of those types of focus groups, but if you give me your information, I can make sure that Frank Palumbo can maybe update you.